episode number 40. It's been one hell of a trip here trying to get this episode done. I am currently sitting in Chase's basement, and it's just me and him. We were supposed to have April on Saturday night, and there was a little bit of a snowstorm, and Chase got scared and couldn't drive. So now I came to Winnipeg to get this done.
Yeah. Man, I was thinking about it, and like, things change so much when you have kids now.
Yeah.
Because I was like, back in the day, I wouldn't even thought twice about hitting the road and going to do that podcast. But now, you know,
yeah,
kids would miss me.
So big podcast number 40, milestone.
Yeah,
got 40 awesome. Of them done. Yeah, just me and Chase today. Tristan had some other activities he had to attend.
Yep.
April is not here, so we're gonna do a different podcast. What are we calling this one?
I think this is gonna be like the. It's just gonna be on like controversial topics in the outdoor world.
Okay.
A little bit.
This is. Yeah, so it should be pretty interesting, I guess. I don't really know what we're going to get into here. Chase has got some points down on a piece of paper that he's going to attend to. But before we get to that, there's a few things I want to talk about. Some of the stuff that's coming up here in the next month or so.
Yeah. Man, we got a busy spring.
Well, February isn't really spring unless you live in Jamaica. But
I'm like, as soon as we get past like New Year's. Yeah. I'm like spring.
Spring. Yeah. Yeah. But February 20th, we're doing the Delta Waterfall. Is it like a banquet?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a banquet dinner, fundraiser.
Fundraiser, yeah. And that's at the Manitoba Museum. And I was like just on their website. And if anybody's interested in coming to that banquet, we're going to be doing a live podcast on stage with the CEO of Delta. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe the CEO and one of the head biologists there.
Oh, nice. That'd be a good one because I have a lot of questions about that. Just Delta in general, because I don't know much about them. But I was on their website just to see how hard it is to, let's just say, order tickets. And so if you go on their website and just Google whatever, Delta Waterfall, you go on there, and they've got like a whole bunch of different, like, let's say, like chapters throughout like North America. So you just look for the province that you're in or the state that you're in, and then go to the calendar off that, and you'll be able to find all their banquets or fundraisers. And when I was on the one for Manitoba, I noticed that Minnedosa has one that weekend as well. So it'll show you all the ones like throughout the province.
Yeah, I think there's 3 or 4 different chapters in Manitoba. Is that correct?
I'm not 100% sure. I just noticed the one in Winnipeg that we're going to, and then the one in Minnedosa that same weekend, actually. So that's February 20th. If you want to do that, go and buy some tickets. It's, you know, supporting Delta Waterfall. They do a lot of good work and stuff for migratory game birds.
Yeah, I like Delta a lot, man.
Yeah.
Rold was is our contact there, and man, he was telling some pretty interesting stories to us when we met up last week there.
Oh yeah,
super cool. I'm pumped up about getting to meet these people and dive in deeper about just conservation and in the waterfowl world. And
yeah,
he's telling us a little bit of the history on some of the waterfowl lodges in Manitoba and stuff like that. Awesome.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great, great event. And like I said, if you want to come watch one of our podcasts, we're going to be doing it on stage. It's going to be our first one kind of live, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, come and support a great cause. Grab some tickets, bring your family, whatever. And then, you can see us do a podcast in front of everyone and probably look stupid for a little while. But and then following up on that, on February 23rd, we're doing an ice fish event. It's kind of like a meet and greet, come and go tea is the way I want to like make everyone think this is going to be. But we're going to do it from 10 to 3 out on the ice. We're just going to go fishing. We're going to have Josh McFadden out there cooking some food. So maybe you can get in touch, you know, like talk to him and when he's out there and check out some of the stuff that he's doing. I think Graham Crawford's also coming.
Yeah, Point Proven Kennels.
Point Proven Kennels is coming. So hopefully, if the weather's nice, I'm not saying he will, but maybe he'll bring one of his dogs and we can watch at work or whatever. So that'd be cool.
Yeah.
But basically, it's just like it's free for anyone. We're going to find a location on Lake Winnipeg and send out kind of like the coordinates of where we're at. And we're going to do a podcast there. And if you're coming, bring your deer sausage, bring some food, and we'll just like have fun and fish and just start meeting people and tell stories and have fun.
I'm super excited about that too. And I have had some people reach out to us through social media too and said they're pretty pumped up to meet Josh and get some of his cooking and try some of his cooking and watch him cook and stuff. So
yeah, and then the guy from Scout Route Boots might come as well, so he might be out there. So it'd be good to meet him and check out some of the boots that he's got for sale and all that stuff.
I got, I think the boys from Harvester Outdoors are going to be out there too.
All right.
Yeah. Nice. So that'll be good.
Yeah. And like anybody and everyone. So, I mean, if you guys are, anyone that's listening, going to be around on that Sunday, shoot us a message and we'll give you some more information. But we're trying to like gather this as we go too. So we've got a lot of work to do yet. But basically, we're just going to show up and hopefully do a podcast. And, and the other thing too is I've been talking with the guys from Yeti fish houses. So if you ever seen like those trailers on Lake Winnipeg, the like ice fishing trailers, we're going to try to get a demo of that so we can bring it out on the ice and people can take a look at it. And we want to try to do a podcast out there. So that'd be like the perfect spot to do it because there's a table and everything.
Yeah.
It'll be quiet, etc. So
that'd be awesome.
Hopefully that it all works out, but we got a little bit of work to do.
Mobile podcast trailer.
Yeah. Just donated it.
Yeah.
And then the last thing that I want to mention is April 4th and 5th.
I believe that's the dates.
Parkland Outdoor Show in Yorkton, Saskatchewan. So we're heading west and we're going to go and do that outdoor show. It's actually super cool. We've been in talks with the guy that puts on the show and runs it. So he's been helping us out a little bit, and then we've been talking with him quite a bit. So that's an outdoor show, April 4th and 5th. There's also like a 3D archery shoot that's going on while we're there. There's a bunch of other like elk calling, a bunch of other seminars that's happening.
3D archery shoot?
There's a 3D archery
shoot. Oh, man. So I'm in on that.
Bringing your bow, eh?
Yeah.
And they've got some pretty like good, like let's say like headliners, like Cody and Kelsey Robbins.
Some celebrities.
So they'll be there. It'll be a good time. So come, and if you guys are around that area on those dates, come check it out. You can go online and buy those tickets too.
Come lose some arrows in Yorkton with us.
Exactly. Oh, and that being said, we're also going to be set up with the guys from Scaler Up Boots. So they're going to set up in our booth as well as our stuff. So we're going to have our merch there so you can purchase that. They're going to have boots. And if you don't know what we're talking about, you can go to ecogenics.com, look up Scaler Up Boots. They're like the best rubber boot that you can get for this area, I'd say.
It's pretty much like walking on a real comfy cloud.
Yeah, it's like wearing slippers.
Warm, comfy cloud.
Yeah, and I know there's like a lot of fishermen, a lot of hunters and stuff like that, that wear rubber boots every day. These are like better than what's on your feet.
Toss your old boots out and get yourself some Scaler Ups is the bottom line.
Yeah.
Did you mention we're going to be doing some podcasting there in Yorkton too at the Parkland Outdoor Show?
But we will, yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to have our equipment there. We're going to set up. I think we've got a couple guests. I'm not going to name drop yet because kind of keep it a surprise. But we got a couple guests lined up while we're there. So.
But we're going to be doing some public engagement too. So getting a few passerbyers hopefully to come and sit down and have a chat with
us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be great and tell some stories. And that's kind of like the same thing I'm kind of hoping for that ice fishing event on the 23rd is to have people maybe tell a story. If we don't do a podcast, we just record a bunch of nonsense and hopefully put something together.
That's one of my favorite things is just hearing stories from other people too. And
yeah, you just get sick of listening to Tristan and I, eh? It's like you need something new.
I heard that's all these stories a million times already.
Yeah, no kidding. But so yeah, the other thing I want to mention, this episode is brought to us by TransCanada Brewing in Winnipeg, Manitoba. If you guys are ever in Winnipeg, you go to 1290 Kennison Boulevard, and that's where their tap room is, and you can go there for a beer, pizza. They got live music on certain days, or live entertainment on certain days. They're open from Wednesday to Saturday from 11 to 11, and Sunday from 12 to 7. So if you're ever in that area, go and check that tap room out. Go have a beer. Or if you're at the local LC, then go and buy some TransCanada beer.
Man, I love that beer.
Oh, so do I.
Yeah.
I just made some wicked beef jerky with it.
Really?
Yeah. I got the idea from Josh, obviously, because I seen he was making jerky. Fuck that. I'm going to make some jerky. But I used that blueberry beer and used some honey and then some like spices and stuff, made this marinade, let it sit overnight. And yeah, it's pretty unreal.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's really good.
So good.
So anyways,
here we are.
Here we are. Any other announcements we got to talk about before we get into the meat and potatoes of this podcast?
Or not that I can think of at the moment.
Nothing. You have nothing to say.
An announcement?
Or like anything?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Do you?
No.
Anyways, so we're kind of basing today's podcast around some controversial, maybe not controversial, but just some debates that are often talked about in the outdoors world.
Yeah.
And just to get our side on them and figure out whether there is a best or better way. We're certainly not the authority on it, but...
No, but you get our opinion and idea.
If our opinion matters to you.
That'll give you something to talk about at around the campfire or whatever in the ice fishing shack this year. So,
yeah. So the first thing I want to talk about today is based around hunting. And there's laws that are different throughout, obviously, Canada and the States, obviously, is a big industry down there. But hunting with crossbows in archery season, right? So we're not allowed to hunt with crossbows in archery season
right. In
Manitoba unless you have like the disability pass where you're not able to hunt.
A disability pass?
Or what's it called?
Permit, maybe?
Permit, yeah. Pass. Anyways, yeah, so if you have a disability permit, you get doctor's note, then you can hunt with a crossbow in archery season in Manitoba. But yeah, what's your thought on that, man? Should we be hunting with crossbows in archery season, or should it stay the same?
Well, my ideas behind it, I guess I have two trains of thought. First of all, is like, I don't know much about the crossbows, and I don't know like how far you can shoot with them, etc. But I know that, you know, I think they reach out to about like 100 yards very easily. That being said, I mean, our compound bows setups, you can get there with you know what I mean, like a
oh yeah, guys, a bow. Guys can shoot it accurately out on. I mean, it this different skill level.
Yeah, and I just think like for Manitoba, and generally in Manitoba, I'm wondering if they change that rule to say that you could crossbow hunt in archery season, is there that much of an advantage? And I just can't see it as things are progressing in that archery world.
Would you buy one?
A crossbow?
Yeah.
I've thought about it. I have no desire to shoot a crossbow.
Yeah, I don't really have much desire either. My side of the argument for this is like, if you look at like how archers in general, they put lots of time into the craft and practice into the craft. And I mean, trad bow is a whole different animal. And even shooting compound bow, you know, it takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of time and knowledge to like set up, to get the stance right, get your technique right, get all the proper equipment that works, and get like properly sized up for your bow and get everything tuned in there. And there's the whole draw cycle that happens too when you're actually about to, when you want to shoot an animal, right? So that adds a different factor to it. Whereas like, so we're talking about like, man, if I said you could buy a bow, practice with it for a month and be hunting in a month with that bow, I think that would be a pretty fair kind of estimate. And you could shoot something, say, like, to 30 or 40 yards.
I think that's very fair.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
but
I think, sorry. No, but I think that anybody that picks up, if someone was like, oh, man, I want to try archery hunting, and went and got a compound bow package from the store, they could be hunting. If they picked it up Friday, they could be hunting by Sunday.
Think so?
Yeah.
With confidence?
Well, with the, oh, yeah, to, like, say 30-yard shots, 40-yard shots, yeah, absolutely. I mean, once they're set up, all you got to do is pull them back, figure out some, you know, some technique, which wouldn't take long. It's, I think the biggest thing when it comes to archery hunting, it's like, I don't know, like that one episode we did with Hack, and we were talking about that, and he kind of made a point. It's just like a compound bow, once it's set up, is kind of like picking up a rifle. You know, you take a few shots and you should be able to shoot fairly well with it.
I don't think so, man. Like if you're getting into archery hunting, there's so many different variables that you need to focus on to be effective with that bow. And I don't think to grab it and be hunting the same weekend, I don't think practical.
I guess we're gonna have to have an experiment.
Yeah,
we're gonna have to get someone that doesn't bow. And I mean, like, I'm not the argument that I'm having, I'm not saying that that's like the best way to do it.
Yeah.
But I think it can be done. And that being said, it's just like I think of other people that, for instance, I've got a friend that got drawn in an archery season. He didn't pick up his bow for like 8 years until this archery season was coming up. He got drawn for it, picks up his bow and takes a few shots. He's like, oh yeah, I'm good. I'm still good. Like, yeah. I still nodded. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
maybe it's like riding a bike, I guess.
But. Yeah, there's a lot of muscle memory that goes in there. You know, muscles, don't forget.
Yeah.
But, and that's, I mean, to like drive this point home, like as far as like crossbows go, man, you could pick one of those things up and be effective with it almost instantly, especially if you have experience shooting rifles and stuff like that. And you don't have the disadvantage of having to draw that bow back when you get on an animal and hold that bow back and you don't have to be as stealthy.
Yeah. Right? And the thing is like
and you can be accurate out to 100 yards the same day with that thing.
Right.
Pretty much. Right.
Yeah. I don't know. The other part of the whole, what was the original thing you said? Crossbow and archery season?
Yeah.
I think the whole thing behind it too is I don't think too many people would, if it became legal to crossbow hunt in archery, I can't see that many people switching over. Like the archery hunter is a whole different breed that, you know what I mean? Like some guys will want to get into it and put in the time, and it's in a way a great time waster, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Rather than just picking up a rifle and shooting a deer for meat.
Yeah.
So I couldn't see a whole bunch of people switching over, but I guess my point is that if it ever did switch over to, you could use a crossbow in archery, I don't think it would make that huge of a difference, because you can shoot, like I said, with a compound bow and a setup and lots of practice, you can shoot out to 70, 80 yards anyways.
Right. I don't like it.
You don't like
it? I'm not buying it, no.
Why?
I don't, just because of the, I feel like a crossbow has a great advantage over a compound bow, and I think if we're keeping things like fair, we'll say, I think archery should be like a traditional, not a trad bow, but like a something that you have to pull back to shoot
what,
an animal.
What would be like the reloading rate on a crossbow? Like, would you have an, like, you're allowed to shoot crossbow in muzzleloader season in our province. Would there be an advantage where you could just, like, start cycling through arrows?
I don't think so, man.
Reloading a muzzleloader?
You have to, like, because the draw weight on a crossbow is, like, 130 pounds or something like that, or 100 pounds. It's pretty heavy, so you can't just, like, zip that little string back. There's, like, a mechanism that you have to hook up. And some of them have like a string, like pulley system or whatever, or you got to do it on your feet where you pull it back and hook it into the trigger mechanism. So I don't think it happens very fast. You could probably cycle through arrows in a bow faster than you could crossbow for sure.
What about,
but I guess the black powder.
What I'm saying with the black powder. So do you have an advantage by shooting a crossbow? Cause you could reload that crossbow like half as fast kind of idea.
Yeah, I guess you could. Yeah. Yeah.
But anyways, the whole point of muzzleloader, and I guess archery is one shot, one kill, so you shouldn't really be thinking about reloading.
Hopefully not,
But it's happened.
Yeah. I've made a kill shot on my second shot before whitetail hunting.
Really?
Yeah. Completely messed up.
I'm just drinking my $7 bottle of water here.
Man, I can't believe you could have got a beer for that price.
No shit. So I ordered food from Brown's Social House. And I ordered it on the phone, obviously.
I've never been there.
No?
No.
And So I'm on like this diet, which sucks, by the way. And so I'm like cut carbs. So anyways, I'm like, "Ann, can I get a bottle of water?" And she said something. She's like, "Oh, you want blah 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 water?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, like whatever." And then I go and pick it up, and it was $7.25. But it's a glass bottle, so I can reuse it, I guess.
Yeah, I think you paid.
Come from Italy.
$6 for the bottle.
Still tastes the same as that coming out of the tap. But
so they shipped that water from Italy.
Apparently,
this is Italian water. Wow.
Yeah. I'll be just whipping up spaghetti tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The smoothest taste. Is that right?
Okay. What do you got up next on your list? Are you done with that one, or do you want to keep going with that?
Yeah, I'm done with that one.
Okay.
Made very clear where I stand. It's crossbows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know anyone that shoots crossbow?
I know a couple guys that have them. They use them for like around their yards and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of shooting a firearm.
Right.
Or in like zones that are restricted for.
Like what are they shooting? Squirrels and shit?
No, like deer.
Oh.
Yeah. So like if it's a muzzleloader shotgun zone or whatever that you can. Right.
My old man's talked about buying a crossbow instead of his muzzleloader. He's been an avid muzzleloader hunter for years, but he had some pretty good problems this year with his gun. So I think he went to Joe Brook and went and talked to a guy there about they're ordering, like, I don't know how many they're ordering in. So when they get them in, Dad's going to go and take a look at one and maybe look at doing something different. But who knows?
Yeah.
Be interesting. I'd like to shoot one anyways.
Muzzleloaders can be quite finicky sometimes, right? Because they're pretty dirty.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You got to take good care of them. Yeah. We can piggyback off this and go talk about this. I've seen this debate a couple times on some of the forums on the interweb.
Yeah.
And this is the archery. Can I shoot hunt archery white? And I can't put my words together today.
Oh, my God.
Can I hunt with my bow in the muzzleloader season?
Right.
Archery.
Right. And a rifle.
Yeah.
Do you have, like, the thing brought up on the hunting?
Man, I got the regs right here.
Good. And before you read the regs, I'm just going to tell you a quick story.
Okay.
But I've had this argument with quite a few people because I archery hunt all year.
Right.
As long as I can, as much as I can. I mean, throughout the proper seasons,
right,
or whatever. But anyways, I've had this argument a lot, and it was actually a good friend of mine. He's like, "Well, no, you can't. Like, you just, you know, you can't. Like, you're doing this illegal." And I'm like, "No, like, you're wrong." And we must have argued for like 20 minutes about it. But yeah, that's not really a great story. But yeah, what does it say in the book?
The way the seasons are dated here now. The archery seasons run right to the end of the general rifle season.
Right. Right.
So I think back in the day, things probably were different when you had three separate tags for each season. Like you had an archery tag maybe and your muzzleloader tag, and those seasons may have been just.
Yeah. But even
those seasons.
Even in the regs, though, even if you read the general tag, like say the rifle season.
Right.
Technically, you can shoot whatever you want there, no matter what.
That's right. Yeah, it is a general tag, right?
You can shoot shotgun, you can shoot whatever.
General season, right. Yeah, so there's nothing that says you can't shoot a bow in archery season in here that I can find, unless somebody out
there...
Shoot
a bow in rifle season?
Hunt with your bow.
You said shoot a bow in archery season. Shoot a bow in archery season?
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Anyways, the season length, shown here August 26th and November 10th for pretty much every zone, which is November 10th, the end of a rifle season. There are a couple exceptions in these late extended general rifle seasons from November 11th to December 1st. Those are the only seasons open, so I'm sure you could still hunt. Obviously, it's a general tag. General season, so you could probably still hunt with your bow there.
Right.
But I've seen a couple arguments on Facebook on this, and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
I was me like, either. What are these guys actually arguing about?
And like, what would be the point? Like, yeah, it makes no sense to me why anyone would even argue the fact that you can't shoot an archery, like archery equipment's in, say, black powder or rifle, like, why would you even argue that? It's a total disadvantage, really.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Silly.
But.
Yeah.
What about are there zones in Manitoba near the city that are, like, shotgun or muzzleloader only? Are there zones like that or no?
Yeah, for sure there
are. Can you archery hunt in that zone then?
So that would be like 33, 34, and we got an archery season from August 26th to December 1st. And
even in those zones,
38, 33, zone F. Yep.
Hmm.
Shotgun muzzleloader, December 2nd to December 22nd. Resident only. Yeah, so that would be the only exception there. So it was a late season shotgun muzzleloader, from what I can see. December 2nd to December 22nd.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of muzzleloader, did you see that our good friend Jim Shockey switched over to Christensen Arms?
Did he?
And Hornady Bullets.
Really?
Yeah.
Christensen doesn't make a muzzleloader, though, do they?
I don't know. I just seen it on his Instagram, and I didn't really look into it. I've never even heard of Christensen until, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, they make some very high-performance firearms.
Oh, yeah.
They're, like, carbon, fiber, everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're pretty crazy-looking guns. They're like $8,000 guns.
Holy shit.
Super light.
Yeah.
Super lightweight.
He actually had a... If you go to his Instagram page, and he made a post about it, and then he kind of explains in his post why he did the switch. And it was very well written and makes a lot of sense. So
cool. I'll have to check that out.
Not really selling out, but I think just trying to grow.
Yeah. Really surprised me was like John Dudley going to PSE.
Yeah.
And obviously they're offering probably some more freedom or creative freedom, whatever it is. Seems like freedom to grow his brand there.
Yeah.
A lot more than Hoyt was, but
I can't believe Chase Dreilich went over to Matthews still.
Yeah, so. I know. That's still talk of the town, eh?
Yeah.
I was just having a conversation today actually with Buddy Lewis. He's asking me how much I shot my bow since I got it, and I told him it's pretty much criminal the amount that I've shot that thing. I've hardly touched it. I shot it the other day at Harvester Outdoors. They got that range there.
Yeah, we talked about that range earlier and in different podcasts.
Yeah.
So how long is that? I thought it was like pretty long.
You could probably, like, if you were shooting by yourself, you might be able to stretch out to like 25, but it's like it's 20 yards marked out.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's just like a regular range. But it's sweet because there was like nobody there, and they're actually doing archery lessons.
That's great. Great news.
Well, they're still busy. Like they have, I think the Manitoba Archery Association is doing like lessons there.
Oh yeah.
And so they have a couple classes every week, and it's $5 to go shoot.
Yeah.
And it's great. I could only shoot for like half an hour before my shoulders were toast, and
right.
It was really eye opening to be like, wow, you really haven't shot a lot, Chase.
Yeah.
You can't even pull your bow back for... But it was good. Felt good. A little meditation session in there.
Okay, what's up
next? Ready to move on?
Yep.
Barb versus barbless hooks.
What about it?
I don't know. What's your take on it?
I like that Manitoba has the rule that it's got to be barbless.
Why do you like that?
Just for the fact that when you put it through your finger, just kidding. I just like it because it's easy to get the fish off. It seems like it's less damaging. And to be honest with you, having a barbed hook is like really going to save that many catches? I don't think so.
Yeah, there's definitely instances where the barbed hook would come in.
The best part about a barbed hook is just that it holds your bait better.
It holds your bait better, but you can be a pretty lazy fisherman with a barbed hook.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the hook will actually stay in the fish's mouth if you're not tending, like not to say you're not tending to a rod, but like if you see you got a bite,
yeah,
and you got to run over and to get it on like a dead stick or something,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't get the whole barbed hook things. I mean, they might be good for like other fish, like say tarpon. You might want like a barbed hook on, but they also damage the fish more.
Right.
And I wish they, I don't know. I've been hooked a few times before where the barb has been pinched incorrectly.
Yeah.
And man, it's an ordeal to get that baby out. It's not fun.
Did I ever tell you when I got my hand or my finger? I got a hook through my finger. Did I ever tell you that story?
No.
And I was in camp, so it's like in the middle of fucking nowhere. So anyways, I have my two cousins with me, both ladies in the boat with me. I'm driving the boat, so I'm in the back of the boat. And my one cousin got a jackfish, and she didn't want to take it off the hook. So I was like, okay. So it was a treble. It was like a spoon, maybe. Maybe that's what it was.
Treble hooks always get you, man. Yeah.
So anyways, like an idiot, I was like trying to like push it out instead of pull the hook. And I always try to pull the hook out, if that makes sense, to like pushing.
Oh, right, yeah.
So anyways, yeah. I'm holding the fish. I'm trying to push the hook through, and the fish flops, goes through my pinky finger, and it's still hooked in the jack's mouth. And so I'm like, what? I'm like freaking the fuck out. So I ended up, I had to like put the fish, like at this point, it's like, I'm keeping this fish because like he's going to die.
Yeah.
So anyways, put the fish at the bottom of the boat, step on the fish, and then drive the boat back to the camp with one hand because I couldn't get it off by myself. And the girls were like freaking the fuck out, and there's blood everywhere. So anyways, get back to camp. My dad's there. He cuts the hook from the fish. So I still have the hook in my finger. And he's like, okay. He's like, well, I'm going to try to push it through. And I was just like, oh, okay. So he gave me a stick. I bit on the stick. And he like tries to push it through, and it's not happening.
No way.
Yeah. And we're in the middle of nowhere. So luckily, I had another cousin there. He was there. And he's like, well, he's like, whatever. He's like, I'll take you to the hospital. I'm like, okay. And we quadded in there. So it took us like probably 4 hours to get out. But I remember I was on the back of this quad, and every bump, like my hand was just throbbing.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
And, but yeah, I remember they wrapped it up, and then they put an oven mitt on it, and then wrapped it because they didn't want to get it dirty. Like yeah. It's an old quad trail with mud and everything.
Yeah.
So I was just like, looked like an idiot. But anyways, went to Tom's hospital. They froze it. They pulled the hook out, and it was good to go. And I went back into camp that night and it was funny because we went to KFC and got a bucket of chicken and took it back into camp for the guys. That was pretty good.
I remember I got two hook stories to tell you. The one I don't remember fully, but I was a kid out in Kenora, and I was fucking around with one of the fishing rods, I think, and I just got a hook jammed in me.
Oh, yeah.
My finger. And my dad ended up pushing it out, but I got smarties after.
Did you?
Yeah. my second one is actually a little bit more funny. We had a cabin on Lee River for the longest time. That's out by Lac de Bonnie.
Right.
And so we spent a lot of time fishing up there when we were kids, and not the greatest fishery, but.
Something to do.
We were fishing, yeah. And so this is how the story plays out in my head. We had a boatload of people. We had like 4 or 5 people in the boat. And I was doing a little bit of casting, and Tristan gave me shit for casting out of the boat. So I was like, all right, I won't cast, I guess. I'll put on a jig and I'll just sit and jig. So I do that. And then we ended up moving spots. And now Tristan's ripping around this Rapala. And I feel it touch my back and hear the drag go. And I was just like, oh, no. And we were like, I don't know, 12, 13 years old. I was like 12 or 13 years old. I can't remember. But I was not old enough to drive. I know that. So after he gives me shit for casting, he hooks me while he's casting. And then.
In the back, though?
Yeah, in the
Holy
back.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. So my dad checks it out. And. Tries kind of pulling it out, and he's like, no, like these barbs weren't pinched good enough.
Yeah.
We'll go to the hospital. So we go to Pinawa Hospital. Nope, no doctor there. Doctor's not coming in to pull a hook out of someone's back.
So let me get this straight. A doctor's not going to come into work to pull a hook out of a 12-year-old's back.
Yeah.
Out of his back.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
So, or whatever happened. I don't know if they... the doctor wasn't coming in or what the deal is with the hospital, but there was no doctor there at the time. So we went to, what did we try next? I think we went to Bossier or something, and they didn't have a doctor in either. And then we ended up going to Selkirk. And it was like, took all day to get this done. And the doctor at Selkirk was like, oh, well, you got the right doc today, because I used to work at such and such, and like, I used to pull hooks out all the time out of people. She was like up north somewhere working, nice. Like, I can't remember if it was in the PAR or some sort of highly fished area.
Yeah.
Anyway, she tries this little trick to try and pop the hook out where you, like, I can't remember. You, like, pull on it funny and then zip it out, and it didn't work because barb wasn't pinched properly. And so she's like, yeah, I'm just going to push it through now. I'll cut it off and push it through. And, like, I've always thought, like, pushing through hooks should be no problem through somebody's skin. It's not that easy.
No.
She's like, okay, I'll freeze it. And, like, I could feel her, like, tugging and, like, pushing on me. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, I need to sharpen these hooks up.
Yeah.
I guess that could be another argument to, like, buy some Gamakatsu hooks and keep them super sharp and fresh if you ever get hooked. Well, yeah, that sucked.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Made it back to the cabin. Probably got some sort of chocolate bar or something. No big deal. But the entire day driving around, we had, I remember Dad used to have one of those old Chevys, like a 91 Chevy with the bench seat in the front. And I couldn't lean back. So I was just driving around all day, lean forward in the truck because I got a fucking hook in my back.
That's funny. I've never heard of anyone getting a hook in their back, but
yeah,
that would suck. Thanks a lot, Tristan.
Yeah. I think, I'm sure I got him back some sort of shitty way, one way or another down the line.
So barbs versus debarbed, I think we both got the panoramic okay of saying debarbed is the way to go.
Yeah, I'm game with that.
Are you allowed to have barbed hooks in Ontario?
Yep.
Are we like the only province that's got to be debarbed?
You know what? I'm not sure.
Oh.
I'm not sure what they do out west.
I fished Saskatchewan two summers ago. I went to Tobin.
Right.
And I can't even recall, but I know I just barbed all my hooks anyways, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a habit, right? I know at Clear Lake in Riding Mountain there, you can't even have a barbed hook in your tackle box.
Really?
You get to take it, yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole new set of rules over there, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, because we were fishing there last winter, right? Was that last winter we were white fishing?
I talked to a guy. Actually, he's got a cabin there, but he wants to go out into that Clear Lake and go fishing this winter.
Yeah.
So that's something we might have to put on the dock and go there for a night and go fishing.
I'd like to spend more time up in Riding Mountain, to be honest with you.
I just want to, like, man, we were talking about before we started recording, as you mentioned something about, like, just renting a cabin and getting away and just going to do something. And
yeah.
Do a podcast in a cabin kind of thing.
Yeah.
I want to do that so bad now. It's like floating around in my head right now.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So we're looking for a cabin, fairly cheap. If anyone wants to give it to us, you'll get a, we'll mention it in the podcast. How about that? Okay. What's up next?
Camel versus no camel. What's your thoughts? Cause like back in the day, nobody wore camel.
Yeah.
And they still killed shit.
Yeah. There's two things. There's always two things in my mind. But the first thing is that back in the day, they didn't hunt, I don't think, the way we hunt.
Yeah.
Maybe as much sitting in the tree stand.
Yeah, it's a lot different,
yeah. Do you really need camel? Like, my thing I always think about is, like, do I really need to wear this camel, or would flannel work? Or, like, something that's just a broken image?
Break up, the pattern. Or break up your outline.
That being said, I know a lot of guys that hunt and wear like full blaze orange jackets like in the rifle season,
right,
and sit in stands and never have a problem.
Yeah,
so who knows, but I like wearing camel.
If you like do any research into like the animals you hunt, you can find like what colors they can see, and I think one of the colors that sticks out to deer is blue, I believe.
Yeah, I've read heard somewhere. That
I have to double check that, but so wearing blue might not be a good idea, but like any other colors, like you said, lots of people hunt in blaze orange, and like the deer can't see the blaze orange. It's like all gray to them, right?
Yeah. What about for waterfowl? Because I think you need to have camo. If you're not covered up in a blind, you need camo.
Yeah, you got to be.
And I know, I don't know this, but I've heard lots from a lot of old timers and stuff, like just your face. Like they'll see like the sun reflection of on your skin.
That's big, right?
So I always cover up. I'm like wearing buffs or whatever all the time when I waterfowl hunt. But I know a lot of people like paint. They, you know, do whatever. Yeah. But
oh, that's big. I think same thing. Like waterfowl is huge. Man, you get some of those days where the birds are super picky, and like any little thing that's off is gonna throw them off.
Yeah.
I've back in my flying days, you could like see fields that guys are hunting in, and see them, and you see the setups from there, and you're like, oh man, those guys aren't gonna kill any birds today.
Especially the helicopter buzzing around. Yeah. And like the whole face thing too, like even archery hunting, I cover up my face all the time.
Yeah.
And I know you've
Do you use face paint?
No.
Or just a buff?
Just a buff.
Yeah.
I use, I got like an Under Armour one, and then I got another, I got a couple different buffs.
Yeah.
And usually like a toque. I don't normally wear a hat when I archery hunt. I do the odd time, but I usually wear a toque, camo toque.
Right.
Just a thin one. But the thing there is, I know you said on the last podcast we're talking about deer hunting, is like when you think that the deer can see you blink.
Yeah.
I do that all the time. I'll just close my eyes or like squint so they can't see my eyeballs. I don't know if that works or anything, but it's just like in my mind, I think it works.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've been sitting in the tree stand, not covering up my face, like just getting settled in.
Right.
And it's still really early. And then I look and there's a deer walking towards me and I don't have time to cover up, and they don't seem to bust when they look at me.
I mean, there's tons of situations that you can get away with it, right? Yeah. But there's always that one when the monster buck is coming down the trail and catches you.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember, this isn't really a camouflage story, but a story of defeat. I was bear hunting when I was like 15 years old, archery hunting bears. And I was sitting in this tree stand and it was fall bear. It's a fall bear? Yeah. Must have been. Bugs were terrible.
Right.
And so I didn't have a thermocell back then. They weren't even invented yet, I don't think. So I had this bug net on my head. And I'm sitting super still because I'm like 15 yards away from the bait. Yeah. Pretty close. And it's just getting to prime time. And this mosquito like got underneath my bug net. And I'm sitting in a tree stand. So I was like, oh, man. I got to get rid of this mosquito. So I just waited till like I felt him land on my face, and I took my left hand and like slapped myself in the face. Right. And I was like, I'm going to do this quick, hard, kill this bug and they'll be over. And then I can get back to bear hunting.
Yeah.
So I slapped this bug, and as I hit it, my face like moves to the side a little bit. And I had this trail running like right underneath my tree stand pretty much. And I can see like this massive bear standing on this trail, now staring right at me and like totally bust me, and he just like turned around and walked away. It's like, you have got to be kidding me.
Oh, that's great.
But I ended up shooting a bear later that day at that same bait.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a smaller one, but he had a light white crest on his chest and stuff. It was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you have any desire to go bear hunting again?
Not a lot, to be honest with you.
Like a spot and stock, maybe?
Yeah, I might. We did some bear hunting in like on some oak ridges when I was guiding. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might do that. But I'm not. I don't know. I know a lot of people that won't eat the meat if I, mm-hmm. if I have it. I mean, and it's good if you cook it right. But I don't think I could eat an entire bear myself. You know what I mean?
I think you could.
Yeah?
Like, I think you could now. Just knowing your personality-wise. Like, I think that if you got a bear, you'd do so much experimenting with your cooking with it that you'd find ways you like to do it.
I think it would be great for making sausage because it's like a fattier... Well, it has more fat than, like, deer meat, right?
Yeah.
So, I think that would be... one thing I would do is make a shitload of sausage out of it.
Yeah. There's something to be said there, like talking with Corey there in that one podcast about bear hunting. He eats a lot of bear meat.
Yeah.
And he's made me roasts and stuff I really enjoyed. Yeah. Josh McFadden made those ribs for us that one night.
Yeah, those ribs were good.
Bear ribs, those are good. Yeah. I can't, like, I don't know how much of a desire I have to go bear hunting, but I do know that if I go, it'd be strictly for food.
Right.
So I'd be like looking for maybe a smaller bear.
Right.
Than the big boys. But
right. Yeah. There's like I'd have to eat something to shoot it pretty much. So that's kind of like we've eaten lots of bear, not lots, but we've eaten bear before. And, the thought of the trichinosis deal kind of throws me off a bit, but like, I also have a strong desire to go hog hunting and like shoot a pig, and they're full of trichinosis. So
yeah,
I have that argument in my head. Like, is it the trichinosis you're actually worried about, or like, what's your deal here?
Yeah. Do you have to worry about trichinosis in pigs in this area though? Probably not.
Probably. Like if they're feeding in the same area that bears are, they're probably
no. But like, not every bear, every pig has trichinosis. They got to get it from somewhere.
Yeah, it's pretty prevalent in bears.
No.
No,
I don't think so.
Are you sure?
I think it's something that you definitely have to worry. Like, I wouldn't say worry about, but it's definitely something that you got to think about and cook your meat to a certain degree. But I don't think it's in a lot of bears, like maybe, around here.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. That's something. Yeah, I shouldn't be making that statement because I really don't know. But
I'd like to hear those numbers to see like how many bears have trick.
Yeah. Well, because like even when, if anyone heard the Rinaldo story, like even his story, like they got that bear tested because it was known as that area that was triggering that area. So that's why they got that bear tested.
Yeah, but listen to this, man. Like back in the day.
Does anyone get their bears tested now in Manitoba?
Well, no, you just cook the meat to safe temperature, right?
No, but yeah, but if there was trig in Manitoba, like that was like rampant, you would think that they would suggest getting it tested.
I think it is, man. I think it's very prevalent.
I don't think so.
Fuck, I can't talk.
I know.
Anyways.
I'm buzzing today and you're just like on the back wheel here.
Yeah, I know. So, a little history on like the fur trade and roots and stuff like that. I don't know if it was Samuel, I think it was James Monk actually. I might have some details wrong on this, but so he came down with two ships and wintered in the Churchill River there, the mouth. Okay. And they pretty much survived off of bear meat in the winter. And James, so think about this. They have two ships of men. And I got to Google the story. I think I said part of this before in another podcast way back when. But there was like six guys, I think. It was either three or six guys that made it to the end of the winter. And James Monk was one of the survivors. And the reason why he survived, they said, is because he would only eat his meat well done. And they were eating polar bears a lot to stay alive out there. And lots of the guys got trichinosis and fucking died. Really? Yeah. I'll have to look that story up, but it's a good one. It's
pretty cool. Yeah, for sure. But there's also something that needs to be said about trichinosis. When it comes to, like, polar bears, I can totally see it because they're, like, basically 100% meat eaters.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah.
Like, black bears are obviously, they're, like, omnivores, so they eat everything. But I think that if you had a bear that didn't eat that much meat, you wouldn't have that big of a chance.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Like I said, I shouldn't be making these
statements. We've got to educate ourselves a little more on this. Yeah.
That's not on our list of things to talk about anyway, so let's just move on.
Yeah, how did we get there?
Camo. So I guess our panoramic opinion would be camo?
I like camo. I hunt and like I don't have a lot of... I have some camo stuff that I hunt in, but there's some articles that aren't camo, and I still hunt in them
yeah.
with confidence.
In rifle season.
So you can go either or. Yeah, usually archery season, I'm camoed up.
Yeah, me too.
So, but Donnie Vincent, everybody knows Donnie Vincent. You don't?
No.
Oh my God.
Who the fuck is Donnie Vincent?
You're living under a rock.
I know a guy named Jordy Vincent. He used to paint in front of businesses in Neepawa.
Holy moly. Maybe it's his cousin.
Maybe.
Anyways, Donnie Vincent is he's pretty famous celebrity hunter kind of thing. He's not as like well known in the hunting industry. And his big thing lately is to hunt with no camo. So if you follow him on Instagram, he's got a pretty wicked Instagram page. He's got a couple movies and stuff out and shows, so check him out. That's his new big thing. He's making a movement
for
the last year kind of thing. But yeah, if I had the choice, if somebody's like...
If someone was going to give me camo to wear all the time, I'd definitely wear it.
Yeah.
The other thing about camo is that once you buy it, it's kind of like... Well, for me, anyways, it's kind of designated to your hunting clothes.
Right.
So if you like,
which is nice.
Yeah. So if I bought like a pair of Carhartt coveralls and wear them, I'd wear them for everything.
Yeah.
But if it, you know, as soon as you put that camo pattern, I don't wear camo that much, like other than like a sweater or whatever. But I don't wear much camo. Like, doing anything else other than hunting.
And it's sweet too, because then you just get that shit dirty and you either don't see it or you don't care about it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm going to be outside with it anyway.
Yeah. Okay. What's up next?
That's all I have.
That's all you have?
Yep.
Well, it's going to be a short little episode.
Yeah. About 50 minutes.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Do you have anything? Any debates you want to crack down on right now?
One thing I do want to mention is that I did... So, there was a post on Manitoba Whitetail, maybe. And there's guys asking or saying or making statements that they've seen a few deer with their antlers gone. And so I made it. So someone asked, or someone posted something.
Oh, yeah. Someone called you a granola cruncher or something.
They called me a tree hugger. I was like, fuck, whatever. But, anyways, they're talking about going shed hunting. And I just wrote something quick. And it's just like, maybe you shouldn't shed hunt until the springtime when the snow's gone and they're like rejuvenated. You know?
Yeah.
Like this year is not bad. I mean, yeah, we got a bunch of snow here now, but like up until the January we didn't really have much snow, so it's been probably a little bit easier on the deer than having a few feet of snow. But I think it's like, it'd be my recommendation to save your shed hunting till like April.
I agree, man. And like, you're putting extra stress on those animals that don't need to be stressed out more, because those bucks come out of the rut.
Yeah,
that he goes into rut, the best shape he'll be in all year, comes out of the rut, the worst shape he'll be in all year. Yeah. So it takes him a bit to...
And in the wintertime, as you know, is probably not the easiest to recoup when there's not much food around. And when it is, you're digging for it and everything else, burning calories to find it.
Yeah. They do a bit of browsing, lots of browsing in the winter, so...
Yeah. And like, and then there needs to be something said too, because I know like in Arizona and other states, they actually have like... rules in place that you can't shed hunt in certain months of the year because there's so much pressure before.
They set up like sheds, like decoy sheds with cameras on them.
Yeah.
To catch those.
It's crazy, fuckers.
That's crazy.
But yeah, that's my little food for thought this week is just like, yeah, if you're going to go shed hunting, just save it.
Put it on the back burner to spring,
I mean, they're still going to be there.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not like we're, aside, I don't think there's many people trying to beat other people out in the field to find... There's not many shed hunters around this area, I don't think. So, it's not like you have to be the first one there.
Right. Guy I know, farmer, down south. Grain farmer. He always finds all his sheds by his grain bins.
Oh, yeah. Have you heard of, like, people, like, putting... making some stuff to try to knock antlers off?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know a guy, he used to put, like, cables up. A cable trap, and he'd make like a little feeder and have these cables up on the trail, so when the like buck would put his antlers in or his head in there, he'd knock the antlers off.
Yeah I've heard of stuff like that too. I heard of like pails, using pails with some feed in it. Maybe not in Manitoba, but somewhere.
What do you mean?
And, like a pail, and you put feed in it, and then the deer will put the stick there in there, and then...
Oh, I see. Yeah. Because it can't fit their whole head in there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But until you have like deer running around with pails on their head, that'd be pretty bad.
Yeah. That's I think a big thing that's going to be coming down the line here soon is like the complete ban on feeding deer.
It's such a gray area. It really is.
It is, but like it's just such an easy way for disease to get passed on, and especially like with CWD and everything coming down the line, and it's like it's inevitable that it's going to come here eventually. But it's just how do we prolong that?
See, spread? The CWD talk, we've done it. I've done some research about it. I've listened to other podcasts about it. There's lots of different ideas behind it. But the whole feeding an animal argument for spreading CWD doesn't make sense. Because I think that no matter what, especially deer, they're going to pass it if you fed them or not. Like, I don't think it'll ever. I think if you had, like, a bait out, it's not going to spread CWD any quicker than not having a bait out.
For sure it would.
No.
Yeah, because it attracts more deer to the same area. And that the way that CWD passes on easily is through deer contact with each other. Right. And that when they're in the same area, they're defecating, and like you can get CWD. They can get CWD through fucking anything.
Exactly. Much.
But
the thing is,
it's
like
the concentration of the animals in the area that brings all these animals there, and it's just like a...
No. And I get that. And I can see that in certain areas, like maybe in the Duck Mountains or whatever.
Right.
But like, you can't tell me that if we went in the backyard here and put up a bait, it would make CWD growth that much faster when they're already going to that same alfalfa field, all 50 deer in this area anyways.
Like, yeah,
that
but
part of the argument I don't understand.
Man, even the spreading out of... I mean, I guess it's...
And every deer goes nose to nose. Every deer goes to like, scrapes and to, like... You know what I mean? Like, I understand. I understand it, but at the same time, it's just like, well, how much more would that actually happen?
I think it would happen more because I don't agree that, like, every deer goes to scrapes. And
every
like
combine deer spills grain. Every grain bin leaks a little bit. Like, there's still going to be concentration of the deer. And what I'm saying is that if there was... you know, 300 food plots that were grown in Manitoba or baits or whatever, however they do it in Saskatchewan, right, say, I don't think it would make any difference because it's already here or it's already getting spread.
Yeah, but it'll reduce the rate just because there will be less contact. That's the big thing they say about mule deer. The reason why it seems to be more prevalent in mule deer is because they groom each other more, or like they do more nuzzling each other and shit like that. So
you know that crazy dude Ted Nugent?
Yeah,
rocks. He has, I think, I can't remember where I've seen it on YouTube, but he does a little thing about CWD and about like baits and stuff like that in front of like maybe Congress or something.
Oh really?
Yeah. And like he like goes off on it, and it's he makes some really like really valid points that makes me, because I was always under the impression that this baiting thing is no good and we shouldn't do it in Manitoba. But then I started just doing a little bit different research and hearing other opinions, and I'm just like, well, if it's already here and already spreading, I don't know if not having baits is going to slow it down or not.
Right.
That's where I'm sitting.
Right. Other disease wise, like I know in Rocky Mountain there when they had that big TB outbreak, and that was due to people baiting the elk, and the herd that was eventually got to a size, it was like something crazy, like 600 elk on this one piece of property coming to eat off the same fucking hay bales. And that's how the big spread of TB got started in the park there.
Right.
And yeah, it was a big deal, man. Cost them a lot of money.
Yeah.
Fix that, monitor that. And yeah.
Speaking of herds, so I got some information about my bison herd.
Oh, yeah.
So anyone that's listening, I've had quite a few people message me or us on Panoramic and whoever else. But apparently the herd that I found that's out and about cruising around is a privately owned a farmer's herd that I guess like a bunch of them always get out, and they're always just like scattered all over the place. So I guess there's no wild herd there. They are. ripping around in open fields, and I wasn't seeing things, so that kind of makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. You think the farmers would get pissed about that?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they got to make a mess on, like...
Unless he owns, like, all the property around there.
Maybe.
But, yeah, I've heard that they're, like, into the, the Shiloh, like, rocket range areas. Like, they've been in there. They've been all over the place. And apparently, like, I wonder what the rule would be behind that if you just went... You got permission from the farmer and you just went and hunted one and shot one. Because, really, it's not, it's not, like, Manitoba-owned. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
it's a privately owned animal.
Yeah. Yeah, because... it's not something that's governed by the province at all in Manitoba.
But it'd be pretty cheap if you went buffalo bison hunting.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They do govern it because there's a wild herd up at Chittick Lake and around that area. And you're not really,
that's up by Moosehorn?
Yeah. Yeah. By Gypsumville.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of west of Gyp there.
I heard there's a wild herd there.
Yeah. They go up to Waterhen sometimes. So when one gets shot or whatever, if they're hanging around town and need to be dispatched or whatever it is, it usually goes to a local First Nation.
Oh, yeah. There. Can First Nation hunt them legally?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure the legislation on that.
I would doubt
they
it,
might have a traditional harvest they do where they go shoot one or something something like that, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm done my $7 bottle of water here, so.
Yeah. Probably would have been done that long time ago if it was a beer.
Yeah, I know. I could really use a beer right now, to be honest. Take the edge off.
Yeah, shaking a little bit.
Yeah, it was a rough night last night. Oh, well. You got to do that once in a while, right?
Cut loose.
Yeah. Well, right on. So, I guess final thoughts? Final?
Final thoughts. 2020 is looking to be a promising and exciting year for Panoramic. We got lots of wicked stuff happening, and all thanks to our amazing followers.
Yes.
And people engaging with us, and thank you.
Yeah, man. I'll second those words for sure. The other thing I'd just like to mention that is if you are looking for some gear, check us out on www.panoramicoutdoors.com. We got hats, sweaters, t-shirts, baseball tees, tank tops. We've got a new gray hat coming in.
Man, I love these hats.
We're going to post about it here shortly, probably this week, I hope. So if you want to get one of those hats, we're only ordering a limited number. So if you want your name on one, can you throw it up on our store like a pre-order kind of idea?
Yeah,
we can. So someone, if you want one, basically get on it because we're only going to have a few. We're not going to be...
limited
stock. I don't
know
what we're going to do with them yet. If they sell, all right, maybe we'll order more. But as for now, we're only ordering a selected number. So
yeah.
But yeah, so go and check that out. Also, if you can please just give us a comment, rank us. What is it called?
Rate
us. We really appreciate it. That goes a long way for our Panoramic podcast. It basically spreads the word for us. Every time you make a comment or rate us,
share,
yeah,
everything.
It basically gets more eyes on it. So, yeah, we're trying to grow. 2020 is going to be a big year for us, and or we're hoping. So we just like your continued support, and we appreciate every single one of you.
Yeah, and if you see us out at any of these shows or at an event, certainly come by, say hi, let's have a chat, have a beer, have a coffee, whatever.
Yeah,
and yeah.
Yeah, anybody in that Yorkton area, whoever listens, we're looking for maybe a few spots to go have a beer while we're there. So drop us a line and tell us your favorite spot so we can go and check it out.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's all I got for now.
Okay, man.
Over and out.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Keep your lines tight. Keep your powder dry.